This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, great. So welcome, everyone. It is October 5th, and this is a meeting of the Competition and Consumer Choice sub-team of the CCTRT. And I'm Jordan Buchanan. I'll be chairing the call. Start off by asking just briefly if anyone has an update to their statement of interest. All right. Seeing none, why don't we go ahead and get started? I did a bad job and did not send out an agenda in advance. I think we have, in terms of agenda, I'd like to maybe have a brief discussion at the top about outstanding research items, just to set expectations. I know there's been some discussion of the final AG report, and Aliza's given an update there. I wanted to briefly cover parking and then any other sort of updates that folks might be looking for or need a status on. And then we'll review. Wodo sent around a couple of write-ups last night. We'll chat about those briefly, see if there's any findings from them. And then we'll see if there's any, some of these other papers that we've sent around have had small updates since we last called, see if there's anything we want to discuss about them. And then what I'd like to do potentially at the end of the tail end of the call is just start to talk about where we are, what we stand in terms of findings. I think with Stan's paper on trademarks, I tried to write up a few bullets to summarize the high-level findings. I'm going to start to try to collect some high-level statements like that into a findings doc just so we can all agree with sort of the high-level conclusions that we're making. I've started to try to draft up a prose sort of framework for the discussion, and I decided it would actually be pretty helpful to try to think about what we know, what we're agreeing upon as part of that. So, I'd like to start to talk through what we think we know. So we'll hopefully get there as well. So why don't we start off with a quick update on research. I know there's been some discussion on the list about the final AG report. Aliza, I think you mentioned on the list that we expect to see that soon, but could you give us a quick update there?
Hi, Jordan. Sure, I'm happy to do that. Yes, there have been a few delays, so we haven't been able to publish it, but I'm hoping to do so this week, hopefully tomorrow. I should know more later today.
Okay, thanks.
Lisa, will that be a draft or the final?
That'll be the final, and it'll be published for public comment.
Oh, but it'll be final, not a draft.
It won't be a draft, correct.
Thank you.
They've taken into consideration all the comments that you provided in Vienna, and I've incorporated a lot of those into the report.
Great. Thanks, Aliza.
Sure.
And then it sounds like Wodo is waiting for that to be published for some of his data points. Is that right, Wodo? I'm going to go with yes, because he asserted so previously on the list. And he says he's having a bad connection. So... if that's going to be published in the next day or two, that's probably no problem. Otherwise, we could consider breaking out the data that we're looking for. Do we have any other places? Stan, are you waiting for data from analysis group? Anywhere else? Are there outstanding requests from them?
Yeah, there are at least one that I can think of offhand, which is the in the industry structure piece, there's a table they produce, but they're producing a revised version. But I've talked to them about that, so I think that's on the rails. There's a placeholder for it in the draft. Yeah, so that's the main thing I think I'm waiting for them.
Okay. And is anyone else for the work that they're doing waiting on work from an ELS group just to make sure that we're not missing anything through the gaps?
I'm sorry, Jordan, I forgot. I also talked to Greg the other day about the price analysis, and he promised me he'd also be sending that.
Can you just elaborate on what you mean by that, Stan?
It's a comparison of the weighted average of the wholesale prices of a sample of new GTLDs with a weighted average of the price caps for legacy GTLDs.
Okay. This is new versus legacy.
And Stan, this is Aliza. I've followed up with Greg and Stacey on that to see what the status is. So I'll keep you guys posted on that if I hear back today.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I said that I've followed up with Greg and Stacey on both of those items you just mentioned yesterday. So hopefully we'll hear more about those two items today.
As you know, I'm completely relaxed. I'm the most least impatient person on this call.
I appreciate it.
All right, thanks. And then on the parking analysis, Aliza, I think you had said we're still waiting to finalize or get back a contract from NTLD staff. Is that still the current status?
Yes, and it may be delayed. I'm not sure. I'm still working with NTLD staff on the terms of the agreement. So I'm not sure where that's going to land you all. It may end up stretching out the timeline a bit.
Okay, so one thing we may want to talk about as we get into the second half of the call is what we would do if we didn't have any parking data. Because it seems like, although we've been quite optimistic we'd be able to get that data from NTLD stats, it may be that we won't be able to get the comparison points to legacy GTLDs at the pace we're working at. So I think that's a topic we'll have to discuss at least. All right, and is there any other research tasks in flight? I think, Aliza, I owe you a follow-up on the analysis of the .com registrations to compare to the new GTLD registrations to the inverse of the study that ICANN staff's already done. But that's blocking on me, I think, right now.
Sorry, Jordan, you said you owe that to me?
Yeah, I described a project
Okay.
Where we would look and see what new GTLD registrations had happened and seen, what .com registrations had happened and seen if it was, would have been possible to register that name in a new GTLD to do sort of the inverse of what we'd done previously to look at the new GTLDs to see if it was possible to register in .com. And you had sent back some questions that I haven't responded.
Okay, I remember. Thank you.
Sure. Okay, anyone else waiting on any research items from staff, analysis group, Nielsen? Okay, sounds like no. So why don't we move on to WOTO's papers. Hopefully, Brenda, have we been able to connect to WOTO via telephone? Typing. Now we have two WOTOs. Oh, we're dialing out right now, it looks like. All right, we'll just give this 1 second to try to connect WOTO in via telephone.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Great. Fantastic. All right, Wado, now that you're on, we're going to put you on the spot right away. You sent out a couple of papers last night, I think.
Yes.
I don't know to what extent folks have had a chance to fully digest those. One's on registrar price competition, and the other's on brand. On the price competition front, which is the one being projected right now, I know that Stan at least had a little bit of an exchange. So why don't we go ahead and jump in? Wada, do you want to just summarize what you were able to take a look at and any high-level findings you took away from the data?
Okay. Thank you, Jordan. If I start off with the price competition paper, this one basically I was using the data that is in analysis group. I think it's on page 34 and 35, where they say that they did a study. They were interested in describing how registrars compete with each other. So they did that study and they came up with some findings which indicated that there was a positive correlation between price, which I'm defining as a retail price, and registrations, number of registrations. I think I have come up with some causes or reasons that could be attributed to that. I think if you have my report, you can see I have five of them there. And then I've had a little bit of exchange with Stan, some discussion with him. So I don't know whether he has something he could add, maybe which could put some clarity to some of the things I was putting here. Stan, do you have something? Hello.
Yeah, I had actually forgotten this, and when I got Wado's piece, I went back and looked at it. And I actually find this in some respects one of the least interesting parts of the AG report. I don't want to go into great detail here now, but I wouldn't put much weight on these findings at this point.
And Stan, I took away from taking a look at this that the correlation is not very strong. There's probably not a correlation, and if there is, it may be positive.
Yeah, I don't even know that the usual way to do this, I guess what I had in mind originally was the following. We have a sample of GTLDs. We have something like the average retail price for each of them. We have some measure of concentration among registrars. And the question is there, for example, the hypothesis would be, the less concentrated our registrars, the lower the retail price. They actually never perform any. I don't think they actually perform that calculation. And the stuff they do provide doesn't. They don't provide tests of statistical significance. So I only looked at this overnight after I got Wado's thing and went back and looked at it. But my first reaction is, I wouldn't put much weight on these results.
So Stan, it sounds like instead of looking at concentration, they just look at registration volume. Is it per registrar?
What they do here is it's exactly what they do, but they don't even do a regression. They basically count the number with positive and negative correlations, and they draw inferences from that. I have to think about this a bit more, but again, my first blush reaction is, this isn't the way I would have done it.
Sure. I imagine it would be possible if we wanted to do the concentration-based approach to potentially ask them to perform that calculation. It seems like they would have the data to do that already.
I actually think that was on my original project list. I don't have it in front of me. I think if I can look at this, let's see. It was actually project 4 of the project list I circulated a long time ago. Correlations between mean and median registrar markups and each measure of registrar concentration.
Okay, I'll have a look at that later on and see whether I can adjust the paper.
Yeah, I mean, it's sure. I think Jordan's right. It's probably something that they could do relatively easily. I don't know what it'll show, but at present, I'm unwilling to draw any conclusions from what I've seen in the earlier. Now, of course, they may have done some more work on this in the draft we're going to see tomorrow.
So it does
look like another thing.
So it'll be interesting to see the draft. It does look like for Project 4, they performed the concentration analysis within each TLD, but what we didn't get was any price analysis within the TLD.
Yeah. I mean, that's the most obvious sort of straightforward thing to do. I don't know what it'll show, but they may have already done it. I don't think that's what they did in – I can't find it in this, but maybe it's in the report. Let's wait a day or so to find out.
Yeah, all right. And I think that's
–
well, that's what you were planning on doing in any case, right? You were looking for the additional data. Is that right?
Yeah, I think we'll wait for the new report and see how they handle it there. Then we can proceed from that point. Okay.
And I'm happy to work with Voda on that.
Okay.
Thanks, Stan. Yeah. Thanks. I need your expertise, actually. Thank you. So the second project is this one on .brands. I think this one is a little bit more straightforward. Basically, the high-level question was, have benefits of choice exceeded costs? And the measure here was that if .brands are not moving to their new GTLDs, they register them, but they are not moving to the new, they are not moving operations to the new GTLDs. Then there's a likelihood that the benefits the costs of choice, how do I put it, the costs have exceeded the benefits if the dot brands are not moving in significant numbers. So the source of information, the source of data was the observatory.domains site, which seems to have some good information. And I think you have the write-up on the screen.
So I think we're still projecting
that write-up.
The other paper. So
a projection of that, so that I don't need to say it out. Okay, so while it's being put there, okay. All right, so maybe I can just be talking about it, but there were a total of 557 dot brands that were looked at, of which 464, that's 83%, were live. Live means that they have at least the dot NIC at the second level. However, only 86 were active, that is having second-level domains other than the mandatory.nic. So I've concluded that this shows that at the end of August, the majority of brand TLDs had not upgraded from their legacy identities.
Thanks, Wada.
And I've tried to come up with a few reasons. It's just my thoughts why this could be, but this is open to discussion.
Yeah, thanks. I think the causes are actually quite interesting to look at. I note on number 3, you say that Netflix may have started to migrate and then reverted. Do you have a... Is there any sort of citation we could point out for that? Is there like a news story or other?
Yeah, I'll look for the citation I'll put there.
Okay, that would be really helpful, I think.
Okay.
And anyone else have questions or thoughts about this write-up from Wodo? So my takeaway looking at this is that we would conclude that at least for brands, most of them, it looks like most of the registrations have either been, you know, I don't want to describe motivations too strongly, but more likely to be defensive or, you know, for whatever reason, the brands are registering the names, the TLDs, and then not using them. So for those dot brands, at least, we haven't seen a lot of the potential benefits be realized. Defensive seems a little strange.
I was suggesting if we could get some additional information. I don't know how possible this is, but if there was a survey done on a sample of the dot brands who have not yet migrated to find out what their planning is, whether they are planning to migrate, if they're not going to migrate, what the reason could be. Is it possible?
Yeah, I guess this comes back to the I don't remember if does anyone remember if we had any questions like that in the applicant survey around usage of the proposed use or like whether they were using them and if not why?
Yeah, because there's a possibility that this migration is a function of time, and given enough time, most of them might migrate. So we need to eliminate that or validate it.
Yeah, I'll just share totally anecdotally our experience at Google, which is that it is in fact there as Jonathan points out in the chat, there's a lot of switching costs, and the Netflix example probably is a good one. And so unless you have a really compelling rationale to move to the new GTLDs, there's enough inertia and switching costs that it makes it, at a minimum, very slow to do so. So we have a very small number of uses for .Google, for example. So we'd probably fall into the .Google would probably fall into the 12% of names that actually has some usage on it. But it's still very small. Our main presence is still on Google.com. Our other brands like .Chrome and .Android and .YouTube are not used at all so far. And that's largely because we just haven't identified the use cases that make it compelling enough. And so I would say our registrations were not really defensive so much as the fact that we didn't anticipate another opportunity to apply for TLDs again for several years made it so we were opportunistic. We wanted to lock down the opportunity to use them if we wanted to, even though we didn't have the use case laid out in advance. And I suspect that's probably pretty common amongst these brands. Stan, I see you have your hand up.
Just a quick point. There's an analogy to the inertia point that Jordan just made. The economic literature on standards explains often that people are reluctant to move from a poorer to a better technology because of switching costs or inertia. And maybe we can at least say something about the fact that this is analogous to that.
Yeah, that would be really helpful, Stan. If you have any pointers to that literature, Waldo, I'm sure, could add that to his write-up. Megan, I see you've got your hand up. Megan, if you're speaking, we can't hear you yet. And still no audio for Megan, unfortunately.
Okay, Jordan.
Yeah, go ahead, Warren.
Okay, maybe as we're waiting for Megan, further down on the paper under the recommendations, can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can.
Yeah, go under ahead. The recommendations, there was something I was thinking of. I've not yet put it here, but I thought that this was a very expensive way for the dot brands to secure their brand names. That's going to get the GTLD, which is quite an expensive exercise, and then not utilizing it. So I thought in the recommendations, if there's going to be what I could call maybe another round, that we could think of another kind, if I can call it RPM, where the dot brands can be able to secure their brand names without necessarily having to get a GTLD. Just a suggestion, a recommendation.
And sorry, Wada, could you clarify, what do you mean by secure if it doesn't mean getting the GTLD?
Yeah, in the causes here, I was saying that one of the most likely causes is defensive registration. Defensive registration is an expense. It's quite high. If you have to actually apply for a GTLD and go through the process and rigors of getting the GTLD, it's quite an expensive exercise. And then if you're not going to use the GTLD, it doesn't make sense. So if there was another path in which the brand owners could be able to secure, that is, they don't have to do the defensive registration without going through the exercise of doing the defensive registration, perhaps it could be preferable.
Yeah, thanks, Wado. I will note, I mean, so one of the reasons I'm a little skeptical of the defensive registration explanation per se, as opposed to the sort of opportunistic registration that I described, at least for the case of Google, is that there actually is quite a good intellectual property protection built into the guidebook. And so we at least felt pretty confident that if someone else applied for example, .Google, we would be able to stop them from doing that through the objections process. Now, obviously, there's some exceptions to that. For example, there's currently a large conflict over, for example, .Merck, because there's multiple companies with rights to that name. And so they might feel more compelled to try to secure it defensively to prevent another entity with the same name from getting the TLD. But at least in the case of sort of distinctive global brands, I would imagine in most cases the existing objections mechanism might be sufficient. That might be something that we might want to ask brand holders through the INTA survey, though, as to whether they felt like the defensive protections in the guidebook were sufficient.
Yeah, but there have been cases where there were applicants who were actually fighting over the same brand name. I know one case, this German, I think it's a pharmaceutical company that also had a branch in the U.S., and they have been having this fight for the name. So that kind of situation.
So that's right, Wado. I guess the question it should be raised, like, would it be reasonable to allow one of the, you know, the Merck was the example that I gave, and I think it's the one you're referring to. Would it be reasonable for one Merck to be able to just defensively prevent the other Merck from getting the name, even though they weren't planning on using it themselves? I think that's an interesting policy question. I don't know if we're going to get to the heart of that, but you raise a good point in thinking about whether applying for the TLD is the right approach either. I just want to note, Megan's put some comments in the chat because it sounds like her mic isn't working. And she said, in addition to what Stan said about standards movements, there's also, is there not also an element of consumer attraction, i.e. consumers are used to Netflix and Netflix.com, and they tend to do that instead of looking to new domains. And on the other hand, since some 60% find domains by means of search engines, the problem with the search engines and not the consumers themselves. And so I think putting together some different pieces of data that we have, if we look at the Nielsen Consumer Survey and see that users are a lot more comfortable with TLDs that they recognize, for example, That does seem to jive with what Megan has suggested in chat, is that it may be that since people don't really know about these things or are used to legacy GTLDs, that you have to overcome that as well as part of the switching cost. You're going to have to actually convince people to know about and trust your GTLD. The flip side of that is what Jonathan is suggesting in the chat, which is that maybe these brands are getting their GTLDs precisely so they don't have to go and register the SLD across all of the TLDs. So maybe if you think like you, I think, for example, I think AARP, which is the American Association for Retired People, applied for .AARP, and the way I've heard about them talk about it is they want to train everyone to know that if it doesn't end with .AARP, then it's not a real site associated with the AARP. And so maybe their strategy is we'll just pay the $185,000 and $25,000 a year, and that will prevent us from needing to go and do a bunch of defensive registrations and all of these other GTLDs. So that's an interesting point, Jonathan. I think somehow we'd have to bear out, we'd have to see if there is some correlation between whether the brand has a TLD or not and whether it's how common registration, defensive or second level registrations are. I think I may have asked for something like that, but let me make a note to follow up on that. A dot brand. Does having a dot brand influence the number of SLD registrations, new GTLDs? Okay, Stan's been patiently waiting for a couple minutes with his hands up. So, Stan, do you want to jump in?
Yeah. Oh, by the way, some of these alternatives are discussed in my write-up of trademarks. I just would sort of raise one point here that Megan asked a question of David, and his response was, yes, there are alternative ways of protecting your trademark, but sometimes the optimal strategy, I'm putting words in his mouth, is to duplicate registration. So there are a number of possibilities, including the one that Jonathan referred to the other day, which is buying blocking services. And I think I tried in my revised version of trademarks is to spell out what seemed to be the available alternatives. It's possible, by the way, I was thinking about this the other day, that the low median number of duplicate registrations may mean that people are pursuing alternatives. And so if you can buy blocking, you don't have to duplicate, for example.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. That's almost certainly correct. I guess the thing we're missing is we don't know the number of blocking registrations, right?
Yeah, so I think at this point we can only speculate about it, but I think partly in response to the various comments that I received, I try to list the alternative ways that a trademark owner might think about this.
Sure, that makes sense. And it seems like we have one new hypothesis from our discussion today, which is if you have a dot brand, you might feel less compelled to defensively register at the second level because you've got this position at the top level that you think is going to ultimately be the mechanism that you use to sort of build a online identity around your brand.
Fair enough. And I'll try to do a write-up of the inertia point and run it by Megan to see if she approves it.
Okay, great. And I will do a quick follow-up to see if we've asked for this in the past, but if not, maybe we can get Analysis Group to take a look in their trademark data to see if there's any relationship between the if in their sample of trademarks, some of them also applied for their dot brands, to see what the sort of histogram of second-level registrations look like for those versus ones that didn't have equivalent dot brands. I think that would get to Jonathan's point at least. Aliza has her hand up.
Hi, sorry. I was about to say, I think in the trademark project, Analysis Group actually took out those marks that had applied for brands from their analysis, if I'm not mistaken. But I can follow up on that.
By took out, you mean they excluded them from their numbers, or by took out, you mean they broke out and we already have them?
Sorry, it excluded them from their numbers. That's right.
All right. Might be interesting.
And I think that was at the request of the team because there was this similar discussion in Vienna about, we should treat those differently or maybe exclude them from this type of analysis. We only wanted to look at marks that didn't have their own TLDs. I'll have to go back to my notes, but I recall having this conversation.
Yeah, I recall having it as well. I think it would be, maybe we asked for the wrong thing. It probably is more useful to look at the maybe they, if they can just rerun the numbers on the ones that do, that did apply, then we could compare to see if there's any difference in behavior.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions or comments for WODO on this trademark write-up? All right. No. Okay.
I'm actually looking at the analysis group thing. I don't see that they excluded them. They just say they took a 25% random sample.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's wait to hear back from what they did already, and then we can also see whether they're capable of breaking out the dot brands versus not, and see if there's anything interesting that emerges. I mean, it is also possible, for example, that the brands that applied for dot brands are more famous, and therefore it is just more likely that those brand holders are more aggressive about protecting them through some combination of registering the TLD plus SLD registrations and blocks and so on. And so what we may see is that there's actually a positive correlation between the registration of a dot brand and and the number of SLD registrations. But we'll probably have to combine some objective data with some sort of survey data to better understand the motivations of these people, or speculate a little bit depending on what data we have available. All right, so let's move on from this discussion then. Thanks, WODO. These were, I think this is, these are helpful write-ups and should help advance the conversation. I do like the fact you spent some time trying to think about the causes. And I think if we can try to, I think they give us some good places to try to focus on either follow-up research or just trying to sift through other pieces of data that we have to substantiate them, but they're great thoughts.
Okay, thank you.
So we have 19 more minutes, and I wanted to start to talk a little bit about how we're going to collect and organize our findings. So, for example, this will be a hard discussion to have without me having written this up in advance, but maybe let's talk through the exercise and we can figure out how to make it useful. But for example, previously on Stan's previous trademark paper, I had summarized sort of three high-level bullets of that paper, which were for everyone's memory. First, that as with previous expansions of the gTLD space, some trademark holders engage in defensive registrations. Secondly, in the sample studied by analysis group, 54% of the trademarks registered in .com were registered in one or more of the new gTLDs, so about half. And then third, that most trademarks are registered in a small number of gTLDs, the median was 3, but a small number of trademarks are registered in many gTLDs, sometimes hundreds of gTLDs. So that was the sort of high-level summary of what Stan had written before. And there's a lot more nuance in Stan's paper, obviously, for example, talking about possible reasons why people might be doing this, that it may be defensive, it may not, but certainly there's some amount of defensive registration taking part. You know, alongside this, we could probably add a conclusion from WODO's paper that a significant majority of the dot brand TLD applicants haven't yet made use of their dot brand. And Stan, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, I asked an Alice Cooper one more piece of information. They reported the median, the mean, and the maximum. And the maximum seemed really way out there, like 400 and something. And I was curious as to whether there are some guys that do 50 or 75, or is there just a big gap between 5 and 400? it should be easy for them to give us that frequency distribution. I've asked for that.
Yeah, that's right. I asked for that as well. And I think they had promised us in Vienna some sort of histogram of the distribution. So hopefully we'll see that soon. I imagine they're busy at the moment trying to finalize the current report. But I agree, that would be helpful to see. So anyway, those are roughly what I would call the high-level findings from our trademark discussion so far. And I guess my question would be, first, are those controversial statements at all? Do we all sort of agree that those are, that's what we've learned from taking a look at the trademark data? Go with a massive silence as compliance on this one. So hopefully that means yes. And then secondly, does it seem useful? What I may try to do is just go through and summarize the points that I think we've either discussed or there's been papers written up on, and try to distill it down into these sort of bullet point things for us all to take a look at, such that we can all sort of agree what the high level points that we're making are. So, for example, I think Kylie suggested on the email list today that we say something like the new GTLD program hasn't had an effect on price competition. I think that statement, as far as we can tell right now, I think that statement is correct. I think, Stan, you're waiting for a little bit more data on this legacy versus new GTLD price analysis, but I think, you know, there's various reasons why this might be the case, most notably the price caps in the legacy GTLDs. But I actually think that what Kylie proposed on the list is roughly correct. We haven't seen price.
I actually think that conclusion is too strong.
Okay.
Two reasons. One is I would have liked to see what has happened to the prices of wholesale prices of legacy GTLDs, and in fact, as we now know, we have little or no data up there. So I don't reach a conclusion of that there's been no change when I don't have any data to observe, number one. And second, the aforementioned point about price caps and their effect on our ability to observe behavior. And so I think those are just much too strong. I tried to write a more nuanced conclusion in the section on my write-up about prices. And I think that's much closer to what I would say than what Kylie has said.
Okay, great. So I think that's a good example of where we probably want to be careful about how the exact phrasing. But I guess, so these headline statements, actually, I'm going to put Jonathan on the spot. My understanding of where we're trying to get to by Hyderabad is roughly that we will have these sort of headline, bullet point-ish statements mostly ready for presentation to the community. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yes. I'm happy to be put on the spot. I guess there's two things going on in parallel. One is trying to get some kind of document published by the end of the year, which is not too significantly after Hyderabad. And then there's the need to come up with kind of headlines, even nuanced ones. I mean, I think the headlines are where we need to be most careful, to Stan's point. But we need to have some findings in PowerPoint form for Hyderabad, but I don't know that being only there by Hyderabad is sufficient for our other goal of having a document by the end of the year. So I think it's better to think of these things in parallel than in serial if we can. But I think you're right in describing what we're going to try to do in Hyderabad.
So I agree with that 100%, Jonathan. I actually found when I went and started to put together sort of like a prose framework for the overall report, that having a sense of what we were trying to say would was helpful. I mean, there's obviously a lot of discourse we can say about, you know, as Stan's papers do, there, you know, we can do a good job of talking about historical background, what's been done, what our predecessors did to learn about the space, sort of what data was available to us, and what we concluded from that data. But the overall, I think the overall structure of the narrative is going to depend quite a bit on what we're trying to tell people. And so getting to some of these bullets, in my mind, is a little bit helpful in terms of thinking about how the document...
Oh, I agree completely.
Yep.
Certainly. I agree completely. I mean, we are going to need to boil this down to, I guess the way to think about it is an executive summary, right? I mean, at some level, we're asking some high-level questions, and we will want to have answers to those high-level questions, not just answers to questions that are so granular that we leave answering the high-level questions as an exercise for the reader, right? We are going to need to kind of percolate up from these individual projects to answer larger questions about whether or not there was an increase in competition generally, and then have nuance about where there was and wasn't and things like that. But, I mean, we're being asked to figure out, to the extent we can, a kind of cost-benefit for the program and to recommend, to the extent possible, how to minimize the costs and maximize the benefits going forward.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My view ended up being that it would be helpful to try to get to some of these in parallel to the good work that's going on now. For example, Stan's papers, and then getting from some of these templates into prose. I think just sort of being able to have a document where we lay out sort of that bullet point level and sort of agree. I think one of the things that one of the challenges we'll have between now and Hyderabad is getting to agreement on these statements, especially where there's nuance involved, right? So this issue of price competition, there's probably the very black and white statement that Kylie led with, and the more nuanced version that Stan said, and both of those statements, could be written down as the bullet point, but I think we'll want to get to agreement on what that looks like. And it will be helpful to do that in parallel, like you say, to actually drafting up the text. And I see you agree. So I did a bad job of summarizing Stan's conclusion on the price competition topic. It sounds like so. The best thing I think would be. And maybe we should add this to the template, or maybe this is just the findings on the templates, are like, where do we draw out those bullet points that we can then sort of all agree upon as the high-level statements? Is that roughly just the findings from these papers, Jonathan?
I believe that it is. I mean, I guess I'm probably going to talk to you and Laureen about an exercise of percolating this down, because when we have our public engagement session, I think we're going to have difficulty, putting every one of these granular projects into a PowerPoint form, and instead are going to need to percolate up to some higher level bullets with some examples from these projects, right, that seem to be particularly instructive. And so, like, finding that balance, that mix between sort of high-level points and low-level explanations for them, I think is going to be the exercise for Hyderabad.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Jonathan. So since I've been promising to work on the general framework for a little while, and actually did do a little bit of work this week, I think I'm going to take as a first pass to try to get to these sort of high-level bullet points. And I'll put together a Google Doc, And I guess I'll also send around DocX versions for Stan and Kylie at least, and any other people that don't want, that would prefer to engage offline as opposed to the Google Doc. But I think having a canonical sort of view of the high-level findings that we're planning on making, if we can keep that document up to date, then that will roughly transform relatively easily, I think, into the bullets for Hyderabad. And then we can start to think about the structure of those bullets as being sort of we can play around with the ordering and so on, and that can give us sort of the outline for the prose that we're attempting to put together. The narrative, as Jonathan says. So I'll undertake to do that probably not today, but tomorrow when I've got a little bit more free time, and circulate that around to the list. So I'm going to ask people to pay really extra careful attention to that document because it will be very, I think, both disruptive and frustrating to have last-minute objections to the high-level conclusions that we're making. So as we add points to that document, I'd like us all to be very confident they reflect the consensus of the group. And in places where we can't get to a consensus, I think those will be also good places to call out now, because those are likely places where we're going to need minority statements in the final report.
Yeah, Jordan, this just as a reminder, I've the very thing you're describing now is the thing that I'm trying to write up and send you a draft of for review before circulating to the broader group. It's about how to
structure,
you know, deciding consensus, yeah, and when to relegate things either to footnotes because there's not sufficient support, or minority report parentheticals, or whatever that structure should be when there's a disagreement on the interpretation of data.
That's right, Jonathan. So that'll be helpful. We'll hope to see from Jonathan soon something to do where we can't get to consensus. But I'm hoping for the vast majority of these bullets. As with the trademark discussion, I think so far we haven't seen anyone object to the sort of high-level summary that we've put together. And so if that remains the case, a lot of these bullets, I think, will stand on their own. And I think even maybe in the case of this price competition, we can arrive at some language that captures the general point that Kylie was making with some of the nuance that Stan was reflecting. All right, and Megan said, I just added something on chat, which said, that is perhaps a bit too nuanced, Jonathan. Could we not say that the data available does not indicate a reduction in retail prices for GTLDs, but the reasons for this may vary, and it will be important for this new analysis in the future, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, Megan, something like that may make sense. I think, like Stan said, he's already taken a stab at this in his other paper, so we could maybe look at that sentence. But I also see he has his hand up, so go ahead, Stan.
Yeah, I think this is actually a little too weak because, in fact, we don't have much of the data we would need to answer the question. So it's. I think we have to say that. In fact, one of the things that I think we have an agreement on, or at least I think some people agree on, is that a recommendation is that ICANN should, in the future, be trying to acquire more of the data that it needs to answer this question appropriately.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. That's a great point. I think in many cases, what we will be doing in the report is saying either we didn't have the data or didn't have time to get to this question, and we recommend in the future someone looks at X, Y, or Z.
Actually, if I may, at sort of personal level, if when my friends read the report, I don't want them to say, "Did Stan really say that?"
I think that's a great standard that we should all be holding ourselves to. Is that our names will be on this report, so we want to make sure that it is as credible as we can make it. Robust, as Megan says. all right. I'm going to wrap up the call with that so we don't run over time. Does anyone have any last-minute thoughts or interventions? If not, we'll go ahead and wrap up and rejoin on the plenary call next week. Just as a reminder, I think Dan's going to be trying to pull together a little bit more information on the policies and UDRP versus URS page. And for the policies, we're waiting for some CCTLD data from staff, which we should have talked about earlier. But I'll connect with Dan and Aliza online to make sure we're offline to make sure we're on track for that. Aliza's typing. Yep. Okay, great. And it confirms that the data should be getting to Dan today. So we'll expect to talk about that on our on our next call. And Wodo, hopefully you'll be brave enough to represent your data, your papers at the plenary call next week.
I will.
Great. And you know, we'll see if we can get a little bit of the feedback from today's call incorporated between now and then.
Okay.
Thanks. And Jonathan, the answer to your question is no. I haven't had any. I think we've tried and not gotten a response yet either. So a little bit of a dry well there, unfortunately.
Can I? If we have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, go ahead, Stan.
Just one quick point I was wanting to make earlier about the parking stuff. It wouldn't make any difference. Our analysis would not be affected if the parking rate was the same for every TLD. And so what we're really interested in at the end of the day is whether they are differences among new GTLDs or between legacy and new GTLDs. That's really the level of the question. And if we write it up, we can write it up and say the results would not be affected if the parking rates were the same, but they might be different.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Stan. And one thing we can look at is the parking rates between new GTLDs because we do have that data. So that may be a place
exactly.
to start.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's a great observation. All right, Jamie just raised his hand. We're at time, so Jamie, keep it brief, but go ahead. We can't hear you if you're trying to speak, Jamie.
Sorry. It seems to me, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. That we need to have a broader discussion of what parking means in terms of competition and as an indicator of competition, or at least I'm a little uncertain because it seems that some believe that it's either anti-competitive or irrelevant or should be discounted. Others seem to believe that it is a form of demand. It may be speculative, but it is demand nonetheless. It wouldn't be there were the new GTLD program not in existence. And the fact that someone may do something with it later, you know, as opposed to sooner, doesn't make it any less of a indicator of competition and demand than if they were to, you know, build it out or redirect it or use it for traffic aggregation.
I think that's right. I would not provide that as the main calculation. I think I would prefer to have it as a variant of the basic calculation, and just because people may be interested in what it looks like.
Right. Just so we can explain context. That's all, and I'll shut up.
Sure.
Let's wait to see what data we have, and I think you're right, Jamie. We'll have to put it in context, and you know, it may be this is all futile discussion because we're never going to get any meaningful data here. But I do think it will be interesting as a quick pass to look and see what parking rates look like across new GTLDs to see if that influences our thinking at all.
Okay.
Anyways, thanks, folks, for joining. Sorry for running a couple minutes over time. And we'll look to rejoin on the plenary call in a week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
All right. Bye.